everyone. It's episode 468 of This Is Whole Life. Every Wednesday morning, we come together in your earbuds for a going over, a retelling, a digging deeper, a exploration, if you will, into the finer details of the message of the previous week here at Whole Life Church. And the only reason we can do that is because we have two highly qualified people that show up every week, and it's not Lucas or Randy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one of those was missing this week.
This podcast would not happen if it were not for Lucas and Randy.
Well,
Ken and I would just be over here pushing buttons, so.
And speaking of pushing buttons, you know, I think Ken's pushing our buttons a little bit this week. He's up and decided, like, after church on Saturday, I'm out of here.
So he's just one qualified person
today. I know, he's just one qualified person to answer questions. So, you know, I'm kind of glad we don't have the call-in live. You know, the call-in line hot today, because it could get ugly because it's just, you know, two dudes and Melanie.
Yeah.
Speaking of.
We'll do it.
We'll do it, though. We're gonna carry on without Ken. And,
just limp along.
He's not the most important person here. Like you said, he'd just be pushing buttons. So what is that, you know? I hope, Ken, if you are listening, which I really hope you're not,
Ken's
honestly.
Not listening.
He shouldn't be listening on vacation.
Ken's sunning himself somewhere next to a pool, pretty sure.
The ginger's on fire. Put him out.
The ginger's
because I love it, because he's always like, yeah, about 35 minutes is good for me in the sun. And then I'm done. And I'm like, what? And he's like, no. Just burn from there. So wherever you are, Ken, it's time to reapply. So there you go. So across the table, diagonally from me, is Melanie Bachman, our worship pastor.
Greetings.
And homiletics aficionado. And so therefore, she knows things that some of us don't know.
I know some things.
Yeah. I mean, I know a few things, but I don't know if they're, you know, super important. And to my left is our assistant communication director, Lucas Moraes.
Good morning.
And yeah, it's just me. You know me.
So. Randy,
yeah.
Communication director. Extraordinaire.
Randman.
Extraordinaire.
Randman.
Okay. So the first thing I want to ask is, who's been to D.C.? Dang it. I knew.
Okay.
If I asked that question, because I know Ken, of course, talked about it on Saturday, that he's one of his favorite places to go, Lincoln Memorial. And that is the one place that we were close. We were around the Beltway last summer. We went to Niagara Falls. We were in Philadelphia, the Liberty
Bell. You bypassed D.C.?
It's like going to Egypt and not seeing the pyramids.
Thanks, Lucas. Heather, Lucas says we're not very smart for not stopping and seeing the monument. No, we didn't. Like Ellie had been there on a band trip not too long before. And I think Heather had been there also on a band trip a few years ago in high school. And so like Sparks and I were the only ones that hadn't seen it. And we had all these other stops of places that we wanted to go. And we felt like for the time that we had, because we took the auto train, and we're like, if we stop in D.C., we're not getting to any of the rest of this stuff, because I'm like, Ken, I want to see it all. I want to see the Vietnam War Memorial. I want to see World War One, II.
Read all the plaques, go to all the museums.
And if you go with Ellie, she will. I don't know what you're going to do, but she is going to read. We were at Pearl Harbor. They had U-boat. It's a U-boat memorial. Mm. And there's hundreds of plaques. And all it says is, like, you know, Sergeant Lucas Moraes, Second Lieutenant, Division Leader, and then, you know, First Gunner Randy McGray, this, and this. And then at the end, in the center, it's like they all died, you know, in service of their country, and we should remember something. She read she went through that circle and read every single plate.
Wow.
So it wasn't like, you know, some people go and, like Ken mentioned, his dad would look for someone that he had known in the war and had lost. And so she finds it super interesting, as do I. But it just wasn't like, if you stop, then you are completely, you're there. Like that's your vacation, I feel like, to even touch the places that you want to go see. So I've been to, but not like in the city and see. And the Lincoln Memorial is like the one I want to go see.
Yeah. It's pretty beautiful. Powerful.
Yeah.
And it was, and you know, I think I've mentioned one other time, maybe twice, that I've actually recommended a book here on the podcast. And so I'm going to recommend my second book.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like we need a drum roll or something.
Yeah, there's one of the... Yeah, where's Ken? He's supposed to be our drummer. Is Lincoln's Battle with God by Stephen Mansfield. Mm-hmm. And it was a... My mom bought me the book, and I've always been interested in presidents and in Lincoln for sure. And it was like, you already know, like Lincoln battled so much personal tragedy, mm-hmm. like only yeah. one of his four kids make it to adulthood. His wife has her own set of like the occult, you know, she was chronically ill, and they have all these things that they think might have been wrong with her, causing her to be like living a life of depression. Like she was depressed a lot, and so was he. Like both of them were just like, it felt like this dark cloud just like hung over them. But it's a really cool book. I highly recommend it. Anyway, I'll put it in the show notes today, and it's an easy read. It's not that long, but Stephen Mansfield is a bit of a expert when it comes to Lincoln and his ideas and thoughts about what his faith, Lincoln's faith was, is pretty cool. I found it to be, just found it to be pretty interesting overall. And if you're into presidents or Lincoln, you might find it interesting as well. Yeah. Ken's big idea was, if you don't want to live in fear, remember. And when he said that initially, I was like, remember what? What am I supposed to remember if I don't want to live in fear? And, you know, in Memorial Day obviously is meant to remind people of – he had this quote from Alex Horton, which I thought was really good. Memorial Day is meant to remind folks of the sacrifice borne by those who fell in battle in defense of the country as well as their families. But once you lose someone in combat, Memorial Day bleeds across the rest of the calendar. And – just the little bit of the story that Ken told, and I'm thinking maybe there's a book out there by Alex. I don't know. I might have to look that up because yeah. it
there's an article at least. He wrote an article.
Right, right. Yeah. And then he asked, in your life, what bleeds across the rest of the calendar? What events, what moments are more than just a day or a moment? They saturate the rest of your life, and how do you memorialize them? Sure. Easy for me to say. But you stop and think about what do we stop and take time for? Birthdays, right?
Mm-hmm. Most birthdays, people. Anniversaries.
You should do. Yeah, definitely.
Yes. don't forget your anniversary.
Don't forget your anniversary. But how many more? Like are like super.
Well, I mean, I think people remember anniversaries of death.
Yeah.
I think people. I don't know. I think that there are a lot of things that we recall and remember that maybe are not forefront of the mind all the time, which is why we have times of remembrance. Mm.
Even things that I was thinking about were not that serious, but I was texting with my best friend since we were both, I don't know, before first grade for sure. And out of the blue, it was a short video, and it set something that we both remembered. And that set off of course, this was probably a memory from, geez, how long have I been graduated from high school? 1990? How's that? 45 years? Yeah. Is it?
It's not 45.
35. Yeah. 35.
Let's not push this further than it has to go. Well,
you're asking me to do math on a Tuesday.
65 years ago.
Tuesday morning, and we're doing math early. And, you know, that was the first number. So 35 years ago, this memory comes up. And yet it's just as we were describing it, we each had a different recollection, but the same memory, the same thing was still the point that we both couldn't text for probably 10 minutes because we were crying, just laughing so hard. And so when you think about those kinds of things, does it matter if I mean, I know what we're talking about is the things that we're going to memorialize spiritually. But spirituality, seeing, you know, it goes so much deeper than it just events and moments. I feel like there's so much of it that happens every day that we grow that maybe deserves to have a memorialized, it deserves to be memorialized in a way that we remember, like, this is when I learned this and it changed my life. It changed how I see God. It changed how I interact with people. And Ken talked about memorializing spirituality, and he gave us four things. He said, there's a monument, there's objects, there's the memorial in time. And then he mentioned, like, second floor, if you come up second floor, you can see a piece of art that was made with 3M sticky notes.
Yeah.
By people attending Whole Life for 2 hours on a Saturday morning, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago.
Something like that.
Something like that. And it's a unique piece of art. And then Tammy Sinkamani got this, it's like a line drawing of Jesus.
Outline.
It's very, symmetrical. And there's just black, like, lines piping in the shape of Jesus' head and maybe breast a little bit. And behind that, the color, though, it's very colorful.
Yeah,
and
it's beautiful.
It's prayer requests on 3M post-it notes behind there. And so we were all encouraged to write something down.
Like prayer requests.
A prayer request, right? And I guess you don't think, I mean, I wasn't thinking art, but it's definitely a piece of art. It's beautiful. And we walk by it every, you know, how many times
every
a
day.
Week? Every day, nearly
multiple
every day.
Times a day.
And how many times a day that we do. And when you stop and think about, every so often I'll catch myself just stopping by that and trying to read what's on there. And it's not like there's a lot that's totally legible, but knowing that your piece is in there somewhere along with everybody else's. And the chat started blowing up with, well, wait a minute. What, I mean, are we going to be worshiping, you know, idols now? Because, you know, where do we draw the line? Like, you're building a monument, and someone would say, well, if you wore, say, a piece of jewelry around your neck with a cross on it, and it's like, well, I think you're worshiping the cross. Or it's an object that could become something, or a monument of rocks.
Well, I mean, I don't know what you do when you walk down the hall, but I don't worship that picture. I appreciate it, but
yeah.
I don't worship it. So I don't know. I think it's interesting. I actually have to go backwards a little bit, because when Ken said we don't have to fear if we remember, I actually think that if you are one of the few that remember and other people around you don't remember, then there's a lot of fear associated with that, you know? Yeah. If we look at the way that even history repeats itself, or even just patterns of life repeat themselves, and or you see a pattern of life happening in someone else's existence, and you have an idea of what's coming, but maybe that person's not aware of it. Mm. I think there is some fear associated with that. Now, granted, I understand that he's saying,
sure,
we just need to be afraid of not remembering that God has led us in the past. That's the fear part. But yeah, what if you remember and people around you don't, and then all of a sudden that gets scary.
Yeah. And I feel like as everyone was having that discussion, and that was a discussion that we grew up with a lot as kids, were, you know, what are idols, or what are, you know, we don't worship items, we worship God. We don't worship the Bible, we worship God. You know, the Bible is a book. It is leather and paper and print, and what's in it is great, but we don't worship it.
You know, there's a philosopher, Jean-Luc Marion. He wrote a book on I am trying to remember if it was called The Idol and the Icon or something like that. But he's talking about the difference between idols and icons. An idol is something that you worship. An icon is something that reminds you of something that you worship. Mm. So it's kind of two different things. Like they're both objects, potentially objects. You may have two objects. One may be an idol, but another may be an icon. And I think that that's typically what happens when we think about traditional symbols of the Christian church, like the cross. That's not an idol. It would be more of an icon that reminds you of something that you do worship. But I do think that sometimes we oversaturate with symbols, and then we start focusing on the symbols more than what they are supposed to represent. That's why in our worship services, like we use cross imagery, but we're not overwhelmed with cross imagery, because I feel like what we're celebrating is the resurrection versus the crucifixion itself. And I actually had somebody ask me one time, why do Christians, you know, wear crosses around their necks or in their ears or put them, you know, if someone that you love was murdered, would you wear the weapon around your neck? And I thought, well, that's a really interesting, I think the cross is so far removed from anything that we do in our society right now that we don't get the full impact of that symbolism as we would if it were another object that could take a life, and then we wore that object around our necks or posted it in our church services.
No, that's fair. That's what would you compare it to in our day? Lucas, I know we reviewed before we went on. We had a question. I think we had a question about this, didn't we?
Yes.
Let's break up the normal flow here, as long as there's only three of us. And because as long as we're talking about it, I think we may have just answered that question. And if not, let's make sure we didn't.
That was a Rod question. He asked, where is the line where a symbol moves from being a memorial to being an idol? I think it's a very personal thing too, right? Because we all have our own perspective when it comes to an object and the value that we are given to it.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think possibly, you know, there are things that we remember and we memorialize because they're good things that we want to remember. And then there are things that we memorialize that we really need to leave behind. And I think that we can build an altar to something that we need to let go of. Mm-hmm. So I wonder about the function of that memorial.
But is there a function to the memorial? Like you said, maybe something that we build and we look to and maybe focus on, if you will, too much, and then it needs to go away. But is there a utility in doing that in the first place? Is that part of the healing process? And then maybe we get stuck there because there's a little bit of, we want to hang out in that spot where we feel all the pain because maybe it's not fair that whatever happened. And so maybe I want to stay there a little bit longer and own some of that. But then moving, I think the part that gets tricky is then when is it time to move on and realize that, okay, we took all the pieces, we built this monument so we could inspect it, we could see maybe what went wrong, what can we do in the future? But then too, is it like, and the situations could be so different, but maybe it's forgiveness that needs to happen to be like, okay, that's back there. It stays there. We're done. We're moving on. That's the part where I feel like we look at objects or even the memorial in time, you know, God says, don't go back and look at the past and like make it seem better than it was. Even if it was, I guess, sometimes. Because sometimes you look back and go, wow, that was pretty good. I'd trade today for, you know.
The meat pots in Egypt.
Yeah, the meat, you know. But seriously, there's some times when you look back at certain events and go, man, I could take that summer back. If I could take that summer back, I'd give up 2 years right now, go back to that summer. But leaving things in where God wants them in our lives, that's the part that I feel like when I'm ever in that situation where it's like, oh, this is something that I need to, it's over. It's over. Let's move on. But I still want to hold on. And I almost feel like that's a little bit of that worship, or that I'm not going to let go of it, even though I know it would be way better if I just let it go and truly gave it to God. I can say the words, but do I mean them? And in my heart, do I know sometimes where I'm like, well, I'm saying it, but I don't really mean it. I still want to hold on to this because of whatever reason. I'm angry. I'm happy. And sometimes it's happy. I don't want to let this go because I feel really good about it. And so
Is it functioning positively in your life, or is it keeping you from moving forward? I think sometimes we, and of course all of this is metaphorical, so we can get way into the realms of
the weeds are tall.
The weeds. But I think if there is a monument that you build to, and maybe you're right, maybe it was functional at one point, maybe it was helping you process feelings or process forgiveness or process, you know, your own actions or whatever, but you build this monument, you know, in the valley of the shadow of death.
Yeah.
And then you set up camp there and build a fire and, you know, and don't ever leave that space. I think that there are monuments that have been built many times where you build it and then you keep walking.
Leave it for someone else.
Yeah.
Well, and I loved the monument. He used the story from Joshua 3 and 4 that, you know, million Israelites need to cross the Jordan. No way across. Priests carry the Ark of the Covenant. As soon as their feet hit the water, it's like, hey, would you guys like to just cross right here? That'd be great on dry land, right through the river. And it's like, okay, yeah, 12 rocks, 12 tribes, everybody grab one and we make a monument. And it doesn't have to be. I think that was, and maybe that was very symbolic. I'm sure it was because they were used to building altars. Mm-hmm. But we wouldn't think today, if you saw 12 rocks piled up next to a river, you'd be like, oh, someone was here. You know, every time we go to stream, Ellie likes to find rocks. When we went to North Carolina last time, we were in a waterfall and she downstream, she set up all these different on flat rocks and she found all these flat rocks to pile up and make little monuments, if you will, out of them. And it's like, oh, hey, someone was here. That's cool. But I wouldn't think of that as something that they did. So like what in our world is the monument? I mean, like, okay, you could say the sticky notes are a lot lighter, a lot easier. Thanks, Ken. Not making us do rocks. That was nice. Rocks are hard to put behind glass. Mm-hmm, There's a lot of reasons to go with the sticky notes first. But and he also mentioned communion. Like some people may look at communion and kind of worship the liturgy of it versus, I don't know if he mentioned that, but I've heard that where people feel like it's almost a worshiping of the process and the liturgy more so than what it actually resembles. Because in some ways it's a little difficult. I mean,
well, it depends on what on your theology of that. You know, for us, communion is a memorial. So what we are partaking of are symbols. So we don't believe that it's actually Jesus' body or actually Jesus' blood. They symbolize it. For some people, they understand, you know, when Jesus said, take, eat, this is my body, that it actually does become in the process the body of Christ and the blood of Christ. For others, they believe that maybe it's not specifically the body and blood of Christ, but God's presence is in it. Ooh. And then it becomes, rather than a memorial, it becomes more of a means of grace where there is actually something spiritual and physical that takes place when you partake of the Eucharist in that way. So it depends on how you look at it.
That makes sense.
What level of, I guess, sacredness we ascribe to the symbols.
Okay. Well, and the last one that he was talking about is a memorial in time, which was, you know, really cool in the way that he framed it, that it's accessible to everyone. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter where you are, it's when you are.
Right.
With the Sabbath. And, you know, it, as much as that also, I mean, it's a reminder, obviously, like he talked about, it's one of the Ten Commandments. It's a reminder of who created the world. God rested on the Sabbath. Jesus rested when he was crucified on the Sabbath. All those different things. And yet I've also heard people say that, you know, if we put the Sabbath above Jesus or above what God wants from us, because we make the Sabbath something so holy or important that it becomes almost a monument you can't get around, because it's just there in front of you. And this is the most, you know, the growing up with a lot of rules, it felt that way. Like, well, you can't do this because the Sabbath is holy, and the word holy seemed to take on an all encompassing power structure that was like, I don't know what to do with this, because where does it, you know? And then of course I was always like, well, where does it say that the rules? And then, you know, Jesus is saying, well, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And, you know, all this that would go around. And it just seems like in every way we have the ability, and no matter what it is, when we're talking about memorializing something, making a monument, an object, that we have the ability to make everything about it versus about God,
what it represents.
Right. So, and
so is that where the transition happens and it ceases being an icon and becomes an idol?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, there's been times when I felt that way, that maybe I'd been doing it in certain areas, and it's very, very sneaky. Also, like, when did this become this? Like, when did the Sabbath maybe not mean as much as it should on the other side? Like, maybe I wasn't treating the Sabbath the way I should, versus the other side where it's like, well, he can't do that because, so in the opposite direction. So
it's the difference. I think part of it is a paradigm, because you can look at it and say, well, I can't work. I can't do this. I can't do this.
I'm grateful I can't work.
But then on the other side of that is we get to have 24 guilt-free hours of not working. Well, we don't.
Wait a minute. Let me backtrack.
People on pastoral staff.
I remember being
do
here.
Do not get to take Sabbath, actually.
A couple short days ago, I remember being here.
But I mean, I think it can be a paradigm of the way that we think about it. Is Sabbath supposed to be this moment where we can envision what it means to be connected with God and connected with each other and connected with the earth, and give the earth a break and give commerce a break and give ourselves a break and take time with family and friends and people that we love and celebrate the fact that we're alive? And we can look at it that way, or we can look at it as this is something that God wants, that's a drudgery that we have to do. And that ruins it, really.
Well, I think part of, like, moving to a different culture where it's not what you grew up with, or surrounding yourself or introducing yourself to people that you're pretty sure don't see it the way you see it, is also a huge, like, mover. Because once you find out that maybe you've talked to someone and you're like, wow, this person is really smart, and they've got a unique idea of who Jesus is, who God is, what the Bible says. Maybe in the Bible, I can think of a person in my life, and we used to do a Friday night Bible study. And coming from the Midwest, and when, you know, things were much, much more conservative in pretty much every aspect. And it was a shock when it was like, hey, you want to go get something to eat after church? Mm-hmm. Go out and get something. And it would be like, Well, I'm not sure, because where I come from, you know, you could lose your position in the church for such heresy or even speaking of it. And then when you start to see that person, they've already made like this mark on you where you're like, wow, I'm a better Christian. I love Jesus more and more authentically than I did before because I know this person. But now they've given me this. Well, I'm not sure. How could that be? That's not what I was raised with. It's not what I was taught. And then you have to critically stop and think for yourself. Well, is this what I believe? Or is this, you know, what's going on? And I think that in all of these, I've met so many people that I can think for each one of these things that he was talking about and how different people, like one of my friends in that same group, they moved, unfortunately, a long time ago to North Carolina, but I still have I don't carry it anymore because I lost it once and I happened to find it out in, I was in Daytona, we were on the beach and I lost it and I found it. So I'm like, what are the chances that I found it? Put it back in your pocket. But it was a little cross, like a metal cross inside a piece of clear plastic. Was, you know, it's not expensive. It's not an heirloom.
It doesn't have to be.
Right. But they lost a child that was stillborn. Mm-hmm. And so all of our group helped do the funeral and, you know, helped him through all that process. And when they left, it was the first guy that probably that I've ever been friends with that cried openly and hugged me and was just like, I love you. Mm-hmm. You know, and he gave each, there was a couple of us, and he gave all the guys one of those just to remember and to think and to, and I still have it.
Nice.
And it's not a huge, like, but again, I mean, it wouldn't be something.
Well, because it represents something else. Yeah. That's what gives it its value.
Yeah. So I just thought this was interesting because I felt like in the chat, there was a lot of conversation around, you know, what about, I think they brought up the Jesus fish, which was, you know, that was a big thing in the 90s, WWJD.
Right.
And so on the back of your car, if there was a Jesus fish, you know, versus, is there a cross? There's a cross that hangs, a metal cross that hangs from my rearview mirror that someone made for me with, it was silver spoons and a brass piece all welded together, and then it had John 3:16 on it, and it was something special that someone gave me, and it's something that I like, but it's not anything more than just that. And if someone knows that I'm a Christian, I don't care. Probably not when I'm yelling at them with my window down, you know. But
that reminded me of a book that I read a long time ago called The Shabbat by Abraham Heschel.
Abraham Joshua Heschel.
Yeah. And he gave an example in that book. I could be wrong because it's been a long time since I read it, but he was building a fence around his farm. And the sunset was approaching. It was a Friday night. And he was concerned and he was worried that he wouldn't be able to finish the fence before the Shabbat. And
Shabbat means Sabbath, by the way.
Yeah, the Sabbath. And then when Sabbath came, he realized that he was more concerned about not finishing the work than actually keeping the Sabbath itself. Mm. So when he got back to keep building that fence, he left a hole in the fence to remind him that keeping the Sabbath was more important than finishing the fence itself.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Although I will say that, I mean, that book it's a really good book. I'm glad you mentioned it. Actually, I was thinking about it the other day because we were talking about monuments in time, and he calls Sabbath a palace in time.
Exactly.
It's like building a palace in time. Mm. But it's not like a legalistic book. It really does unpack the beauty of what it is to be in this vision of shalom, this vision of harmony and peace, and why it matters to take that time and what it means to take that time and what that time is for. Yeah. So yeah, highly recommend that book. That's a great book.
Yeah.
It's on my shelf in my office.
Man. All right. So it's a good thing I recommended book number two today, because Lucas is right hot on my trail. he's got his first one in already, and I've been doing this for 9 years, folks. I gotta keep moving on. Got to start reading some more books.
He's nipping at your heels.
I know. He's right there.
It's a very tiny book.
No, it sounds like a
great
book.
Don't sell yourself short.
But both of those books will be in the show notes and also in the Discord channel if you would like to take a closer look for each of those. And then I thought the Sabbath reminder that, you know, letting Jesus bleed into the rest of the week is such a – was so spot on that – the recharge, even though we do, you know, end up working as a staff, you know, most weeks, what, 50, probably between, you know, 45 and 50 Sabbaths a year, we're here mm-hmm. working. So sometimes it doesn't feel completely like you really have to take advantage of Friday night. And then you hope that you were really diligent during the week so you can go home and be ready for Sabbath on Friday night and at least have like the I would say a little bit of normalcy from what you're used to. But it's really true. The Sabbath that you can really connect and you can connect to family, to friends, to church, to nature. Those are the weeks when you find that afterwards, you usually have a lot better week. And if you can somewhat unplug from everything else, it seems like we're like those weeks go really, really well. So that's a huge part of it. But I want to read that book because that sounds super interesting. And then Ken finished with, how can you use monuments, objects, practices, memorials, and time in your spiritual faith? And the memorials and time is my favorite because you can just invite people to be there with you, even if it's something that you've decided to do on your own, you can invite people to be a part of that, whether that's a Bible study or a get together or whatever, and making memories. And that's part of what makes life so interesting, so fun, and memorable. And so just something to think about, what he left us with to do for ourselves. Let's hit the last, what we have, two more questions, Lucas, and then we are...
Yeah, I think the second one we kind of answered.
Okay.
So the only one left is, the question is, do we really need a monument for us to remember God or reflect God? I mean, what does this say about our faith?
That's a good question. Although... I think that because God set it up that way, you know, God is the one who gave a rhythm mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. from the very beginning, a rhythm of time. And then God told the Israelites, you know, write it on your doorposts, you know, keep it, sew it into your clothes, tell your children when you get up, tell your children when you go to bed. You know, there are particular prayers that were prayed at certain times. And I think that God knows us better than we know ourselves. Hmm. And if God said, hey, you need these reminders, then we probably need those reminders. I don't know that it has so much to do with whether or not we have faith. I think it has more to do with just making that relationship such a part of the rhythm of our lives that it just becomes woven in versus something that we dabble in mm-hmm. occasionally.
Yeah.
It becomes part of the rhythm of our lives.
Great answer.
And I think too, if we're looking at this and thinking maybe you struggled with the Sabbath or other monuments, you know, other things in your life than in your faith, some of my favorite ideas have come from people who just enjoy whatever it is. Like the Sabbath is their thing. They might be a little more unorthodox in how they keep it compared to maybe someone that you know yourself, some, you know, the way you were raised. But when you see somebody doing one of these, these reminders that God put for us, and you see someone doing it and they're smiling and they're happy and they're clearly not only enjoying it, but it's infectious. And now other people are like, man, that's, so to me, if you have one of those where you have a special, something special that you do, a special meal maybe on Sabbath or something else in your life that someone might say, you know, a memorial in time, an object. Ken mentioned the little rock that he puts in his backpack strap to remind him to just talk to God every day. So something cool like that that might resonate with someone else. Help someone else along who, Matthew, that might feel that same way. Like, you know, what does that say about my faith? Well, sometimes you have to see the benefit too. And then your faith goes, oh man, I get all that plus. Like that's pretty cool. Making it, it's, when it's inviting, it's more fun. So now that we are out of questions and we begin to wrap it up, you've probably noticed that maybe this week we've been a little, maybe a little more off than usual.
A little more somber, maybe.
A little more somber. And yeah. If you watched First and Second Service this past week, you heard an announcement from Ken that Jeff Cinquemani's health had taken a turn and wasn't expected to improve. And unfortunately, this morning we were told that he had passed. Either this morning or sometime yesterday. We're recording on Tuesday, so as you listen on Wednesday, you may already know by the time you hear this. But just in case you didn't, we wanted you to be aware.
And for those of you who have listened to the podcast for quite a while, you may remember that Jeff was one of our podcast members for a really long time. When I first got here, Jeff was a podcast member, yep. And he was a pastor here at Whole Life for 26 years.
26, yeah.
Yeah, he retired 18 months ago. And, you know, there's so much about this church that wouldn't be Whole Life if it weren't for Jeff. And Jeff and Tammy both, yeah. You know, this culture that we have. Jeff was involved in so many different parts of people's lives here, you know.
He was a cultivator and a caretaker.
And a caretaker.
Of that culture, for sure.
Of our members, of our pastoral staff. Jeff has just been such a solid, unwavering figure that all of us just have loved so much. And, this morning that news was really difficult, and it probably, you know, for some of you who are listening, may be really difficult as well to hear this news. And we don't have service information at this point, but we will share that information when we have it. But in the meantime, if you pray for Tammy, pray for Brittany and TJ, their children and their families, because this is a really difficult time. So, and if you feel like, you know, you need some help processing this, you know, that's what we're here for. We're happy to help process that through with you. So give us a call. You can call or email the church, talk to Freud, talk to me. But in the meantime, you know, this is a really difficult time for the family, and having been through this kind of experience myself, I know that there's probably not going to be a lot of energy for responding. But if you send texts or emails, or if you want to bring cards by the church, we'll make sure that Tammy and the family get those.
Get all of them. So, yeah. For those that may not be longtime listeners, the original show was 15 with Andy, Randy, and Jeff, and we were just reminiscing a little bit this morning, and at first, Jeff was like, "We're doing what?" And Andy said, "What do I have to do if we're going to do a podcast?" I said, "You just have to sit here for 20 minutes. That's it." He's like, "What do I have to prepare for?" I said, "Nothing. You already prepared the message. That's what we're going to talk about." And he didn't even ask Jeff. Jeff was in his office and he yelled through the wall, "Hey, Jeff, we're doing a podcast." And he's like, "What? We're doing a podcast?" And I'm like, so I went to his office and he's like, "We're doing a podcast?" And I'm like, yeah, it'll be fun. Don't worry. And he would always ask me every so often about, show me the dashboard of the podcast. And he's like, "Wow." He's like, "People actually listen to us?" And, you know, and then when Ken came, you know, the dynamic changed and Jeff was, you know, still part of the show. And Jeff was always like, "We laugh too much. You know, I don't think people are taking us seriously." And then he said, "Hey, we talk about food too much." And I'm like, "That's your fault. You're the one who..."
Jeff is a foodie.
He was the foodie. And so, you know, his legacy lives on. And when we, you know, every time we get to food and things like that, and Jeff was always, we've missed Jeff here on the podcast, just for this little piece that I'll mention, is just that when we would get to the end of the episode, it was so much easier because Jeff would just wrap everything up in this bow where you felt like, okay.
All right, now we're done.
We're done. Like we
Jeff
solved.
Jeff has spoken.
Right. Like we've answered the questions. And then Jeff would come in and just like, okay, I hear what you're saying, But this is really how we should look at this as we move on. And he would put this all together. And I think that was the counselor in him and just the the friend. I mean, Jeff was just, you know, always with a smile and always with an encouraging word, even when things got way off the rails. And he would just sit in the chair next to me and shake his head. And then like, but people listen. And he's like, it's amazing. It's amazing. And, you know, and just Jeff and Tammy both, but Jeff just loved Jesus. And it was so easy to take that in. And so, you know, we're going to miss, we've already missed him since he's left. And this morning was definitely not the news we wanted to hear, but
yeah,
Tammy, we love you. Tammy and family, we love you. And so
yeah.
I don't know how to end the show.
No.
Other than just the usual. Thanks for listening and call us if you need us. Reach out and we'll do whatever we can to try to help and be there and go through this together.